Let me take the opportunity to welcome Dr. Divier and the team, and at the same time allow him to introduce his team.
Thanks, Chairperson, Dr. Mufuke. It's my pleasure to introduce the following colleagues. The lady who's sitting here, or maybe let me not start with her because she's not here. Behind me is Advocate John Ratman, who is the DDG responsible for legislation in the department. Next to me is Mr. Johan Johnson, who is our acting chief financial officer. Our CFO is not well. And then next to him is Advocate Peter Durant, who is the acting head of court services. And next to Advocate Peter Durant is Mr. Donald Mpulo, who is the chief director in our human resources section, representing the DDG for corporate services. Next to Mr. Mpulo is Ms. Chilich Ramanyimi, who is responsible for facilities management. And next to her is Mr. Ms. Kale Vanipile, who is the acting chief litigation officer in the department. And then Advocate Lester Basson, who is the acting chief master in the department. Next to me here is Ms. Lebohang Pahlele, who is our head of strategy in the department. I'm sure that's all. I'm covered, everybody. Can I proceed?
Yes, except to say that other members will be joining us late. The only member here is Honorable Matila. But you can continue the presentation.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. I'll try and summarize the presentation. And I'm doing it on the assumption that you receive documents on time, and I will be the spokesperson of the team, and the agreement is that I will do the presentation and then the team will answer the questions. So that's how we would do it. Chair, our presentation is really, there are two presentations. The first presentation is really the summary of our strategic plan document. And the second presentation will be a presentation on the budget, just giving a little bit more meat on the budget. In terms of the first presentation, we have organized the contents in terms of just introduction, covering the vision, mission and values, and the mandates, talking briefly about the organizational context, our strategic goals, and then I will take you through the strategic objectives as organized according to the three programs of the department, and I'll have a brief conclusion. With regard to our vision, I think it's self-explanatory, Chair. Our vision is a transformed and accessible justice system which promotes and protects social justice, fundamental human rights and freedom. And our mission is that we are committed to provide transparent, responsive and accountable justice for all. Our principles are straightforward: commitment to constitutional values and to a culture of human rights, Batubili, good governance, Ubuntu, professionalism, as well as transparency. In terms of background, I think really the main point we are trying to make is that we have prepared our strategic plan with regard to the guidelines that were issued by Treasury in August of last year. And the point that we really want to make in this regard is that what we have is an annual review of our five-year strategic plan. Remember, the guidelines are saying that departments must prepare strategic plans after every election. So we had a strategic plan, five-year strategic plan, that has been prepared since 2009. And now this is just an annual review that we are presenting. It's a continuation of what we had. I'll now just want to take you through our constitutional mandates. Our constitutional mandates basically covers two areas. The first area is to provide an environment for the effective and efficient administration of justice. And the second area is to promote constitutional development through the development of legislation and implement programs to deepen and nurture our constitutional democracy. And a key point that we should make, particularly with regard to the new area that are developing on constitutional development, is that we'll try at all costs to collaborate with the Human Rights Commission in this area. On slide 6, we have a range of legislative mandates which I would like to summarize. There are mandates affecting the establishment and functioning of superior courts, magistrates' courts, as well as special courts. There are those relating to the appointment of judges and magistrates. There are those relating to the establishment and functioning of the National Prosecuting Authority. Chapter 9 institutions, appointment of masters of the high courts. Appointment of masters of the high courts and administration of the Guardians Fund, as well as the provision of legal advisory services, amongst others. Again, in terms of policy mandates, there are other two very important areas that we needed to highlight. The one being the cluster delivery agreement that was signed by our minister on the 24th of October last year, which has 8 outputs, and we have used this really as I think it has influenced our review to a great extent, because we needed to align with the cluster delivery agreement that our minister has signed. A key point again is with regard to the judiciary. Transformation of the judicial system is also a key policy focus. In this regard, you would know that we have a number of bills. One is the Constitution 8th Amendment, which seeks to affirm the Chief Justice as the head of the judiciary, with the responsibility of developing and monitoring the implementation of norms and standards for the exercising of judicial functions. And in this regard, I need to mention, Chair, that there was a proclamation signed by the President in September last year, which empowered the Office of the Chief Justice to establish a department. And now that department is established, but I need to mention that the long-term vision is not to have the Office of the Chief Justice being part of the executive. This is just a transitional measure that will take the... that will empower the judiciary in the long term to manage its administration independent of the executive in the long term. Rationalization of the superior courts. Again, we have the Constitution Amendment Bill as well as the Superior Courts Bill, which gives effect to the Constitutional Court as the apex court in the Republic and regulate the jurisdiction of the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal to provide a single High Court of South Africa with various provincial divisions. Again, under policy mandates, two issues deserve mention. Realignment of magisterial districts with municipal districts, Chair. You would know that for the last few years, our magisterial districts were not aligned with municipal boundaries. And we have now effect that alignment in most areas, and we have also budgeted 10 million rand, as you can see. But also on the review of the civil justice system, we have implemented interventions to address some of the pressing gaps in the lower courts. This will include the amendment of the Magistrates Court. As you can see, the Magistrates Court Act is an old act of 1944. And it has been amended to extend civil and divorce jurisdiction to regional courts and increase the number of small claims courts. As small claims courts, I need to mention, are very important courts for us, because these are courts that are easily accessed by the poor. And if I remember, I think their mandates extend up to 7,000, up to now 12,000. I think it started at 7,000. We have now lifted that to cover all cases up to 12,000 rand. In terms of organizational context, there are just a number of challenges that we would want to highlight because they have a specific and particular impact on the implementation of our strategic plan. And these challenges we categorize into four areas. There are financial ones, there are ones affecting internal processes, there are ones affecting customers, and there are others affecting, we call them people issues, but they also affect our staff. With regard to financial, there have been efficiency gains that have been implemented by Treasury over the MTF period, and unfortunately these efficiency gains have affected us negatively to the tune of 2.1 billion rand over the MTF period. There are a number of areas that have been affected negatively. One of them was information and communications technology. We ended up with aging servers, out of warranty servers, and so on and so on. And in terms of the newer locations, we think that maybe we can manage this challenge much better this year than it was on the previous occasion. Again, we have had challenges on escalating safety and security costs. And the problem is that we had to provide security services for our own courts. And it has been a big challenge because with the escalation in crime statistics, our courts have been badly affected because we have about 750 service points that we had to cover with about, I think, 6,000 security officials. And it has been quite a tall order for us, Chair. But over and above that, we have to protect the judiciary. And protection of the judiciary has been a particular challenge because you can't determine with certainty what kind of protection you can give to magistrates and judges, particularly because the security threats that they face depend largely on the cases that they deal with, that they have to adjudicate over. If they marry, if they have to deal with divorce cases, maybe the threat is less. But if a magistrate or a judge has to adjudicate cash in heist or cash heist cases, then the security threat just goes up. So it's not, you know, it's a moving target. It's not something that we have been managing. But because of this escalating security cost, there are a number of options that we have been discussing. One, we are looking at using SAPs. In fact, in the task team that I'm sharing, SAPs is already looking at courts that are in the same premises as police stations. They are saying maybe we need to look at those and say those courts that are in the same premises as police stations, as SAPs we will guard, because it's we can't share premises with security, private security, and so on. In others, there has been indication in the cluster that there are soldiers, particularly those soldiers that are above 35 years of age, who are not necessarily being deployed by the South African National Defense Force. So we are working on proposals. There's no final decision on this matter. It's just options we are working on. I think in about a fortnight to a month, we should be sending proposals to our principals to adopt. But at the moment, these issues are under discussion, and nothing has been finalized. Infrastructure and expansion of justice services is a particular challenge. It's a particular challenge because historically, courts have been built mainly in urban areas, and particularly in historically white areas. Other areas were not sufficiently provided with courts. I think since the establishment of democracy, this has presented us with a number of challenges. And in addition, we have had an escalation of infrastructure costs above inflation, which has meant that the cash flow for building new courts is often insufficient and resulting in postponements in construction. There are a number of projects that we had to postpone, and maybe a chief director of facilities management later on may give light on the number of projects that we have just suspended because of financial constraints. And at the rate at which we are going, Chair, at most we can only afford to build 2 courts per annum. We can do no more than that. We have to balance the need for additional costs with the maintenance and accessibility programs of existing courts. We have had to use infrastructure budget for additional accommodation. And this is also a very significant point. Because of the demands that are imposed on us, particularly service delivery demands, inevitably we had to increase our establishment. But unfortunately we increased our establishment without having the financial capacity to increase our accommodation costs. So I think we are now moving towards time where we have to consider other options such as open plan and so on, because our office infrastructure is not moving in sync with with expansion in the size of our establishment. The consequence of which is that I think we have to be innovative. We are exploring alternative funding methods in terms of our infrastructure, like build, operate and transfer, as well as public-private partnerships. Litigation against the state has increased significantly. And it's as a result of a number of factors. Progressive demands regarding the rights of citizens due to increased awareness is something that is good, but it has impacted on increasing litigation. And there has been opportunistic litigation against the state. We as well, I think we have had a challenge of having a fragmented approach in the management of state litigation, resulting in ineffectiveness and so on. At the moment, we are, apart from the budget that we have put aside for litigation, 257 million, there are a number of interventions we are looking at. As of now, I think we are almost complete with a draft policy framework for the efficient management of state litigation. It will just now go through approval processes. We are capacitating the Office of the State Attorney. We are preparing and trying to implement standardized fee structures, particularly for the payment of private counsels. And we are focusing on developing alternative dispute resolution processes. Other financial pressure points, Chair, has to do with increasing the establishment of the lower courts, particularly again given the service delivery demands on us, expansion of support personnel, establishment in the courts. These are your court clerks, your interpreters, and so on. You'll recognize that there have been huge problems, particularly in the South Gauteng High Court, and most of those problems are as a result of shortage of capacity, human personnel. The cost of new and proposed legislation, this is a challenge we have to really get better at, because new legislation that has passed through both houses of parliament have had huge financial implications on the department. I think a case in point, for example, is the Child Justice Act. Implementing that act has been very, very expensive. And I think the view that we have taken as a department is that that act will not be able to implement as a whole all at one time. Certain aspects will be implemented progressively. We also have to ensure adequate provision of library services to the various courts. The judiciary has been quite concerned about the provision of library services. Again, under financial management, the issue of us being qualified has been a big issue, Chair, and something of great concern to us. In the 08-09 financial year, we were qualified due to 5 issues: third-party funds, assets, leases, leave, and irregular expenditure. I am pleased, however, that in the past financial year, the 5 issues were now reduced to 2 issues, which are third-party funds as well as irregular expenditure. Third-party funds we are working very hard on. We are putting capacity in place, particularly financial management capacity in all our courts. We are also focusing on systems, particularly accounting systems as well as IT systems. On irregular expenditure, I think the major problem that we have was application of wrong legislation, which was a major omission on our part. However, we have tackled the issue since November last year. We have put systems in place to ensure that the correct legislation is being applied, and I think we'll progressively manage this issue. On the issue of fraud and corruption, we are trying to improve our cases, management of cases relating to fraud and corruption. In this case, we have increased capacity of our forensic investigation unit, but also we have increased capacity of our supply chain management unit, particularly at same senior management levels, to ensure that the internal controls that are put in place in the SCM environment are maintained and new ones introduced to reduce fraud and corruption. Under master services, on the with regard to issue of customers, we have just had a cooperation agreement between ourselves and Legal Aid South Africa on the estates of minors. And this agreement is assisting us to minimize deceit and fraud against minors, improve the speedy access of minors to the benefits of the estate to alleviate their suffering, and limit exposure of small estates involving minors to legal fees. We have a project called MOVIT Project, managed by our master's branch. The Home Affairs National Identification System has been adapted through the integrated justice system to suit the master's environment to verify clients timelessly and thereby minimize fraud and corruption. The use of this technology has substantially improved the turnaround time of payments, and in addition, the integrated case management systems has been deployed to all 402 magistrates' offices that deal with deceased estates. We also have in place a master's turnaround project that has a number of elements to it. Some of the elements are to rebrand the master services to deliver a highly professional service, build a strong service ethos, which includes, amongst others, identification tags, uniforms, and contact details of senior managers, but also to promote transparency and accountability. We have identified and upskilled frontline staff and increased accountability. The biggest issue that we are also focusing on, insofar as improving our relationship with our customers, has been around maintenance. We have given statistics on new applications received, enquiries received, orders by default, attachments of debts, warrants of execution, and so on. But the key issue here is to inform the committee about our turnaround plan, which is being implemented in this current financial year. We had a project called Operation Isonglo. And Operation Isonglo was a project which was very successful. Perhaps there's room for improvement, but it was very successful because it was a project where we went on a national campaign and targeting certain towns and certain provinces to ensure that maintenance defaulters are identified. We even collaborated with traffic officers to try and even stop people in on the roads to ensure that maintenance defaulters are identified and paid. And in certain areas, it has been very successful, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape. But to further improve on maintenance, we're investigating the possibility of Saturday services for maintenance and other family-related matters. We're introducing mediation services in maintenance matters. We're encouraging and facilitating the use of bank accounts for maintenance payments to avoid queues, and we are improving accountability. Again, in this area, we are upgrading skills of our frontline staff. We are improving management of customer complaints. We are launching an improved media and awareness campaign. And we are also working on business process improvements. We are working on amending legislation to facilitate process for the amendment of the Maintenance Act to make provision for future maintenance, role clarification of maintenance officials, and enforcement of orders. The case law project is a very important project, and I think we have had a fair degree of success. But it's a project that the Department of Justice is implementing in partnership with the judiciary and the National Prosecuting Authority. Honorable members would know that the Department of Justice has no authority over the judiciary because the judiciary is independent. The same would apply to the prosecutors. However, because of the challenges we have had on case backlogs, we have collaborated successfully. From the inception of the backlog reduction intervention in November 2006 until the end of December 2010, 32,750 criminal cases were disposed of in the additional backlog cost, comprising 21,000 cases finalized with a verdict, 9,700 cases withdrawn, and 1,236 cases transferred. For the 2010 financial year, the total number of cases disposed of by the district and regional court rolls was 12,000, and the backlog interventions are continuing in this financial year. In terms of implementation of the JCPS delivery agreement, we have already made progress on a number of areas. In terms of implementing the service 7-point plan, we have delivered bail protocol, we have worked on the reduction of regional court case backlogs project, we have a forensic chemistry laboratories protocol, we have a court screening protocol and the legal aid protocol. And targeting particularly the issue of customer service, we have developed a service charter and service standards which are currently going through processes of approvals. We have a presidential hotline which is a version of a presidential hotline launched by the presidency. And I think we are working on increasing the capacity of the presidential hotline to enable us to respond timely to the complaints of citizens. Under people issues, we have had a number of challenges, shortage of skills in key areas. I think if you look at our annual report, the key area where we had a serious shortage of skills was in financial management capacity, particularly the office of the chief financial officer. There was a point where our vacancies were around 23%. However, we are happy to report that at the moment we have managed to recruit about 3 chief directors and 1 director. And I think 1 chief director and 1 director have already started in the department. We still have challenges on the underrepresentation of women as well as people with disabilities, particularly at senior management. We also have an initiative underway to redirect internal capacity to the following areas: have a compliance unit, strengthen our labor relations area. And labor relations is very important, particularly because there's a strong need in the department to improve our capacity to manage our misconduct cases as well as our grievances. Our contract management capacity also needs to improve, but also our research and development areas. With regard to Chapter 9 institutions, we will continue to assist the Chapter 9 institutions by facilitating the budgetary process and assisting with financial arrangements, promote proposals emanating from the reports of those institutions, ensure compliance with Section 181 of the Constitution, as well as evaluate and investigate the legislation establishing Chapter 9 institutions in order to strengthen them further. In terms of donors in particular, I'm happy to say that our relationship, particularly with the Swiss government, has been very successful in establishing the Small Claims Court. I think later on Advocate Durand will just indicate how we have increased the network of small claims, the footprint of small claims courts throughout the country. With regard to our strategic goals, Chair, again, I'm going to be very brief, taking time into account. We have about 4 key strategic goals that are aligned to the 3 programs of the department. Our first goal is to increase accountability, effectiveness, and efficiency of the department, and this is largely linked to our program 1, which is largely administration of the department, where, as I indicated, we have a number of challenges as highlighted in the qualifications we have received. Strategic goal 2 is to improve effectiveness and efficiency in the delivery of justice services, and this relates to a great degree to our program 2 on court services. Strategic Goal 3, transform legal services to protect and advance the interests of government and citizens and promote constitutional development relates to state legal services. And Strategic Goal 4, effective coordination of the JCPS cluster in the delivery of outcome 3 affects both Program 1 and Program 2. In terms of the issues I've already highlighted, I think I've highlighted that we have three key priorities areas. One is to make sure that we have a clean audit. And we have developed a long-term plan to ensure that in the financial year 2012-2013, we do have a clean audit. We would have sorted out third-party funds, irregular expenditure, and we have, would have ensured that there are no reversals on assets, on leases, on leave. Improved delivery of maintenance, I've already highlighted that we'll be building on Operation Isondro to make sure that we bring most maintenance defaulters in the country to book. I've already highlighted the services we'll be delivering under master services. So these are our three key areas. And I won't highlight because I think I've already spoken on the issue of qualification as well as the issue of maintenance, but colleagues would also pick up on these issues. Just to say that under administration chair, we will continue to ensure that we have indicators that comply and adhere to the SMART principle. We'll ensure that most of our indicators are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. For now, we acknowledge that not all our objectives are fully measurable because in some areas, if you read our strategic plan, we are still finalizing the process of particularly improving our baselines because we need to measure our baselines correctly. And we are also in the process of finalizing our annual performance plan. In terms of the treasury guidelines that have been given, we are expected to have finalized our annual performance plan by the end of April. So we have a draft in place, but we are working on that. With regard to Program 1 under administration, I think I've already highlighted issues. I think my colleague, the acting CFO, Johan Johnson, will elaborate on budget proposals, but I've already mentioned that with regard to information and communication technology, we have a problem of aging infrastructure and we need to modernize. We need to improve our accommodation as well as manage our escalating security costs. But under administration, we really have a number of five objectives, five of them in all. One, to increase compliance with prescripts to achieve and sustain a qualified audit. And this is one of the reasons why I indicated earlier that we are in the process of establishing a compliance unit. Improve management of fraud and corruption cases. I've already indicated that we are working, we have already increased capacity, particularly on our forensic investigation unit. Improve our delivery of human resources to meet full service standards. Increase optimization of systems, particularly IT systems. Increase percentage of outstanding Truth and Reconciliation Commission victims with access to reparations per tiers. If I may elaborate briefly on this issue, Chair, you would know that the Department of Justice has been given a mandate of implementing the recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We had a bit of a slow start over the years, but I'm happy to report that whilst we still have a challenge of spending R1 billion on the President's Fund, but I'm happy to say that in terms of where we are, we now have education regulations in place, and we now have health regulations which will cover medical costs of victims in place. We've just gone through a cabinet process. I think cabinet is just about to approve that these regulations must go out for public comment, and shortly thereafter they will be finalized. We have already finalized regulations covering exhumations. You would know that in terms of the TRC process, there are about 700 people who were identified as having disappeared, and the process of exhuming these people is proceeding. But we have regulations in place to cover the costs of those people. We are now working on community rehabilitation with the Independent Development Trust. And we have already worked with particularly IEC as well as Home Affairs to trace most people. Out of the 875 people who have been traced, I think we are now in a position to have traced at least about 460 of the people. So it's just a pity that IEC was hampered by the forthcoming local government elections, and we hope that after elections we'll be working with the IEC and Home Affairs to trace the remaining number. Under Program on Court Services, Chair, we have a number of objectives on slide 37. Our key objective there is to improve coordination of the JCPS cluster, improve finalization of activities in support of the outputs of Outcome 3, improve delivery of maintenance services, as I indicated, increase protection of the rights of vulnerable groups, particularly relating to sexual offences, Chair, is a major challenge. We need, within the current budget constraints, increase access to justice service by underserviced communities, and most of these communities are historically marginalized communities. However, I've already highlighted that at the rate at which we are going, we are able to build at least 2 courts per annum. So you can imagine that our progress in this regard is not going to be as fast as we want to. We'll be focusing on improving functionality of justice service points and improved delivery of services at the courts. With regard to state legal services, Chair, we'll be focused on improving service delivery at master service points, as I indicated earlier, and this will involve 100% capacitation of master service points and their automation by the financial year 2015 and 2016. Objective 14, increased efficiency in the provision of services to beneficiaries of the Guardians Fund, trusts, as well as insolvent and deceased estates. We'll be focusing on promoting constitutional development and strengthening participatory democracy to ensure respect for fundamental human rights. As I indicated earlier, this is a new area for us, because even though we are a Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, I think the work of the department has been dominated mainly by court services, by work we do through state attorney's office as well as master's office. We haven't paid sufficient attention to constitutional development, and I think we are now focusing on it. We have already established a branch, and I think in the next few weeks we'll be having a workshop to just elaborate further on the programs that needs to be implemented by the Constitutional Development Branch. Provision of legal service to state organs is a very important issue, particularly with regard to improving the capacity of the state attorney's office. And lastly, we'll be improving policy and legislative frameworks for effective and efficient delivery of justice services. And I think later on, my colleague, Advocate Ratman, will elaborate on this point. Chair, briefly, this is an overview of our strategic plan. I think we'll be ready to take specific questions. I don't know at this stage if we should take questions or we should move directly to the presentation of the budget, so that when we deal with questions, I think everybody would have a picture of where we are going. So, Johan, maybe you could just highlight them, give it.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. We should try to get our presentation up. For us, overall budget expenditure, our standard is to get back to again to a 99% overall expenditure. The previous Minister of Finance raised concerns about the quality of justice spent, and I think from our side there is concerted efforts to improve the spending, directing funding to the appropriate programs. What I will shortly reflect in the next number of minutes is the numbers that was tabled by the current Minister of Finance. In February, on the 23rd of February, the Minister of Finance presented the estimates of national expenditure. I think he also tabled the appropriation bill, and those will be the basis for the discussion at our budget vote. So I'm going to reflect to you what is the many allocations per program and the various branches and the various services funded under this program, and also indication on what is our department's contribution to job creation, spending on capital, when capital works, and also what is still our medium-term budget praises. The slide 3 reflects the growth in the departmental budget allocations. In essence, it's quite obvious in 2011-12 minimal growth of 6.3%, and if we assume a salary wage bill increase of 5.3%, then it seems there is little funding available for expansion, and we need to respond to what the Minister of Finance indicated in his medium-term budget policy statement. We must do more women with less. But thankfully to Parliament and Cabinet, we will receive an increase in the second year of this MTF, a good 11.5%, and I will reflect on the services that were funded through this parliamentary allocation. So in the first year, not a lot of new money, but a lot of money coming in 2012 and 2013. What new money do we get? And what does it mean for regions and for provinces and for the justice service delivery? New money that we will receive as a department in totality, that's including the NPA and the Legal Aid Board, is implementation cost of new legislation. In essence, that 85 million and 90 million will allow us to expand our capacity for the implementation of the Child Justice Act, the Children's Act, the Maintenance Act, Sexual Offences Act. We've also received money to expand our capacity at the regional level. In essence, regions can expect that more personnel will be appointed to improve the administration at a regional level, at court and at a court level. We will receive money for the construction of courts. Over the past number of years, we've managed to spend 100% of our capital budget, in fact more than 100%, because we have varimented money to this function. But for once now, I think in this MTF cycle, our budget for infrastructure investment will be around about R1 billion, but new money for courts, for upgrading of our courts, for building of courts, is 240 million, 250 million. Then, for the renewal of our IT infrastructure and court security, 100 million and 110 million. When IT investment do go in cycles, and it's important that theoretically there need to be a major investment or injection into that spending. Concurrently with opening of new courts, you need money for the appointment of judges and magistrates. Some of it relates to salary increases, 150 million and 200 million, but most of that money will translate in appointment of judges and magistrates where we open new courts. Concurrently also there is the operational cost for appointing these judges and magistrates of 37 million and 50 million. There is a presidential initiative hosted by the Department of Justice called the Nation in Dialogue, and for the next 2 years under our baseline there will be funds allocated for this. We had an OSD for legally qualified personnel in justice and in NPA and in the Legal Aid Board. Now for them, the second phase of it, the recognition of experience of qualification and qualifications, we've implemented it now, and it will have some carry through cost. So the result of that would be the higher compensation or per capita cost for people performing legal functions. Then improved conditions of service, that is the basic salary increase that Treasury makes an allocation for. I think one area that is really, the allocation is appreciated is the 64 million and 81 million and 95 million. This is for municipal services. We pay local authorities for water and electricity, and then for municipal services, with the increase in the tariffs, especially in relation to electricity, we needed to have a supplementary allocation, and there is made such an allocation. So, in the budget a number of new priorities like legislation, appointment of personnel, increased salary cost, and attending to municipal services were accommodated in this, reflected in the table 4. But also we had some budget cuts, and I will reflect a bit more for us. Some people will call it budget cuts, Treasury call it efficiency gains. We've cancelled the project, the third party fund. There was a public-private partnership that was on the cards. In essence, we've decided to cancel the project. We've done a study, we've concluded the study, and we've agreed that this thing is not affordable. In terms of the PFMA, you cannot conclude public-private partnerships. You cannot commit funding if you don't have, or commit to certain projects if you don't have funding for those projects. And we had a funding shortfall on this outsourcing arrangement. Our second concern was, based on our assessment, it would have resulted in some job losses, because if we bring in a private party to perform certain functions of government, what will happen with the existing staff? And it was a basis that we've stopped this project. The minister was informed, the portfolio committee on justice were informed, National Treasury was informed on the basis for this decision. And then there were further savings effected by cabinet. On the 8th of December, cabinet says, justice, we cut a bit more. You must cut down on your operational expenditure. But the point coming for us is, there was new money coming into justice parties, but there were also some efficiency cuts. Because we've got a number of entities under us, I think it's important to give you a sense of what new money they will be getting. The legal aid board, in total 44 million, 90 million and 106 million will be allocated to them over the next 3 years. So in essence, they can implement the OSD, they can provide for salary increases, but they can also increase capacity. So it must translate in more candidate attorneys available for legal aid South Africa. The special investigating unit headed by Willy Hofmeyer, they get a many allocation for improvement of conditions of service, but also for increasing the investigative capacity. So the total baseline adjustment for them is 15 million, 21 million and 27 million. Another entity funded by justice whether it is funded under our vote, is Office of the Public Protector, new money 18 million, 24 million, 27 million. And again, you can see there is capacity. And these institutions, independent institutions, those new funding should translate in more personnel being appointed. We've assisted also, or Treasury assisted to the Public Protector with the shortfall on their municipal rates and accommodation charges, the leasing of the office accommodation. Human Rights Commission also, they received some new money. The point is, across the justice entities, you can see there where there is a Treasury allocation for expansion of capacity. But the challenge for us is to have Treasury in one hand give, and the other hand take. And they will argue these budget cuts is you must focus on your core line function and cut down on programs that is inefficient. So this table gives you a sense over the past number of years what is the impact of various Treasury cuts and still a need to expand and expand service. This is the context of the current economic climate and revenue projections by National Treasury. I think for us the challenge is, as the Minister of Finance has indicated in September last year, we as a department must look reduce spending on non-core functions and activities, review spending to weed out poorly performing programs of the VF perhaps related to spending on security. It's important at court level that these things should be funded, but there's alternatives where police can play a particular role in assisting us with courts and security. But I think the Minister of Finance is an aspect of his direction to us. So we must change the accounts of the public service to reduce waste and prevent extravagant spending, shoddy work, and corruption. We totally adhere to them, try to adhere to that. What is in the numbers? I think the core question is, when we have a budget allocation of 11 billion or 13 billion, do we put it in the appropriate programs? Surely if a program like administration and support services is growing substantially more than a line function like court services, then there's something, wrong. So in the appropriation bill and in the estimates of national expenditure, there's five programs. And I'll try to unpack them going forward. But there's also a program called Direct Charge Against the National Revenue Fund. This relates to the salaries of the judges and magistrates. We normally don't worry about this. Treasury will always foot the bill. But we just keep an eye and an eye on it so that this, and if there's shortfalls, Treasury normally foot or give supplementary allocations. But the accountability for the DG of Justice ends with this, from this 13 billion in 2011-12, the 11 billion, it is that for which DG must take accountability for. And there you can see, if you look at the proportions, 2 billion rand is spent on National Prosecuting Authority, 4 billion is spent on court services, proportionally more are being spent on court services. Under Program 5, Auxiliary and Associated Services, here's the spending on the Legal Aid Board, the SIU, and I will reflect this. The point is, nearly 40% of our budget is spent directly, immediate court services. This table does reflect, it tries to reflect where is the growth. And if you look at the graphs, it's quite obvious that the growth in budget allocations is in court services. The trend for other programs is quite stable, while there's a substantial increase in the trend for program court services. I think the same apply also for auxiliary and associated services, but it's because we are beating up legal aid as a department. This is just a breakdown of our budgets. One important number that perhaps we want to reflect is buildings and fixed structures. It's about 600 million rand between us and the NPA that we will spend on buildings and fixed structures in 2011-12. And as alluded earlier, for the first time, we're going to spend a billion rand quite soon on building, maintaining our buildings and our fixed structures and building of new courts. Now, where's the growth? Again, you can see, the growth is, the trend. We're spending not a lot of money on machine and equipment, the yellow line, and it's quite stable. But the growth in justice is in the salary bill. In essence, what this reflects is the per capita cost of people in justice is increasing. So overall compensation is increased. There's a strange phenomenon in 2009 or 10. Was expenditure so high? At this stage, there was a substantial increase in backdated payment of OSDs, the phase one OSD cost back to 2007. The reason why there was such a substantial increase in debt financially because of backdated payments. If I can quickly run through it, we've got five programs. There you can see the expenditure on the ministry, management, corporate services, and office accommodation. And you can see the major sub-programs under administration is spending on HR, human resource management, finance, and IT. And office accommodation, it also includes the municipal rates and taxes. So you can see from 508 million up to 623 million, it is a substantial growth. Again, the slide reflects that 55% is being spent on corporate services. The next slide, court services. Maybe your particular area of interest. Out of this 4.3 billion on court service, which area in court service are we funding? You can see of this 4.3 billion, 2.6 billion goes to the lower courts. The budget allocation of any court is being determined, or these sub-programs are being determined by the personnel structures, certain course drivers like transport and telecommunication. But you would expect that we allocate proportionally more to lower courts than high courts. The Supreme Court of Appeal, a relatively small budget of 17 million, but it's being informed by the personnel structure in the functions. The Constitutional Court, do have a number of functions. And it relates to judicial education, for which they take responsibility for. The functions of the Judicial Service Commission. This is why their budget is proportionally higher. But there is a breakdown of the services confirming that the allocations is geared towards our lower court. So from this program, 60% or 60.7% is being spent on lower courts. Then we've got another program, State Legal Services. Here also an area of form of service delivery that I can highlight is the Master of the High Court, $324 million that's been spent on this sub-program. A new sub-program that we have is Constitutional Development. Now Constitutional Development is a new direction, so it's a direction advised by the Minister that we need to beef up capacity around that program. But here you can see the budget allocations for state law advisors and the litigation and legal services. The slide again reflected Master of the High Court, most probably 55,000 people are being managed, the estates are being managed in the Master of the High Court, and it's a major area of service delivery, and the growth in the past number of years was in that area. In the Master of the High Court, in addition to that 300 million, is 6 billion rand that we've invested in the PIC, 6.5 billion, approximately. So we've got people in the Master of the High Court sitting at six offices across the country, but at each and every court there is over 400 courts, the services is available where we can start to service people who want access to the service. The National Prosecuting Authority, not present here today, but just to give you a breakdown of how much they're spending on witness protection, about 137 million, support service, 495 million, but the major sub-program is public prosecutions. The major area of work of the NPA is in public prosecutions. There is a reason, why from the 2.6 billion and 1.9 billion is allocated to public prosecutions. 72% of the money of the NPA goes to prosecution services. Then the last last program is program 5. There you can see the budgets. Some of these entities have they've got independence. They negotiate directly with National Treasury. The Human Rights Commission is a constitutional institution, and also the Office of the Public Protector. Previously we had the Gender Commission, but they're not with us anymore. Then there's two other entities, it's a Special Investigating Unit and the Legal Aid Board. And you can see the Legal Aid Board, there is a budget over 1.1 billion. You might ask the question, why is the budget of the Legal Aid Board for this year and the next year, or the previous year and the current year, essentially the same or basically stable? It is because within 2010-11 there was a special allocation to the Legal Aid Board to conclude the OSD cost. This is why it was a backdated payment, it is a once-off, it's a big allocation. We've got a program called Justice Modernization. It's just our spending on IT equipment, but also integrating our systems with other state departments like Correctional Services and SAPS, and there we've got approximately 400 million rand available. We've also got approximately 100 million rand plus available for the Represented Political Parties Fund. We receive this money from National Treasury, we transfer it to the IEC, and the IEC will disperse this money to the various political parties based on a certain formula. So the Legal Aid Board, 55% of this program. This is in essence entities that we are funding. Perhaps I need to explain the one thing, the President's Fund, quickly. The President's Fund, there's a provision for 1,000 rand. But we've got over 1 billion rand in the fund. Now this is just to keep the fund alive. If there's a need and a new parliamentary allocation, and if there's developments, then there will be an allocation. But for us, we expect as soon as there's conclusion on the work of the TRC, that this sub-program won't appear anymore. But the important point is, they might reflect the 1,000 rand just to keep the fund alive but invested, I think it's about 1.032 billion rand that is in this fund. This is the various branches. I mean, I'm not going to bore you with the detail, but you can see if it's just one area, one branch or subdivision, court services, over, well, the average increase over the 4 years is 8%. Court service will have a 12% increase, and some divisions will have a reduction in budgets because certain service is no longer needed. Regional budget allocations. Gauteng is our major spending province. The budgets for the regions has been determined by the personnel establishments. If you've got more people, you need a bigger budget. If you've got more courts, you need a bigger budget. But this is in the first cut off or indication of the proportional allocation of the budgets. We will supplement this budget with additional funding because we've got funding earmarked in the national office. After receiving the inputs, we will give the budgets to additional funding to the respective regions. I've reflected on this. This is transfer payments to independent bodies. Just money that it's with us that we eventually will transfer. We've got money that's earmarked in terms of the law. We can do nothing with it. I think one area that I want to share with you, or maybe two areas, is integrated justice program, 140 million in 2011-12. Again, this is a program to integrate our IT systems between police and SAPS and correctional services, and there is a board that oversees that allocation. But the second area that I want to highlight is a case backlog reduction. You know, we are really fortunate through this 224 million rand allocated by National Treasury. It's part of our baseline. NPA, Justice, Legal Board, they do have the particular cut. And in essence, that 224 million should translate in reduction of case backlogs. For your information sake, facilities management, what are we doing? Because the core question is, if you've got all this money, but how much are you spending on day-to-day maintenance and upgrading of the infrastructure? There's an allocation called day-to-day maintenance, 27 million in 2011-12. That money will go to the regions. At any court, every court there will be a budget. So a court manager will have possibly a budget of 50,000 rand. If there's a broken window, he can fix it. If there's a broken pipe, within his delegations, he can fix it. So that is allocation that will go to regions. In the context, if I can get to my last two or three slides, in the context of the President's call for job creation, if we've got this new money, what new posts are we going to buy with that new money? The first thing that we want to do is, we want to appoint approximately 200 new positions to strengthen court administration over the medium term. It will change over the next 3 years. But if in the current financial year, we mean 45 million. We've got challenges in supply chain management and third-party fund management, and there we want to appoint 19 new positions, 45 for supply chain management and 45 for third-party fund management. Maintenance officials, 65 new positions. Intermediaries, the sexual offences courts, 130 new posts. The Children Courts Clerk is part of the implementation of the Children's Act, 150 new positions. The Child Justice Court Clerks, as you remember, because you want to implement the Child Justice Act, 111 posts. Even the Legal Aid Board, there is a provision for 40 million for appointment of additional candidate attorneys. In addition to that, we perhaps not reflected, currently we've got 90 people who manage on contract to assist us with supply chain management. There's also another 30 people on contract to assist us with working in the master's office. The point is, there's a number of positions that in response to the President's call that we funded from our baseline. What is our major infrastructure project that will also translate in jobs through the Department of Public Works? The first is the Limpopo High Court in Polokwane. We plan to spend, we've already started spending on this. Limpopo High Court, it is 470 million. The planned expenditure is around about 478 million, but we've already spent some money on that. And the position is, it seems that there's approximately 600 local jobs that will be traded in the construction industry once we construct with Public Works that court in Limpopo. The Malanga High Court, again, there's some developments. The planned expenditure is 407 million, and the estimate is that 450 jobs will be created. Going forward, yes, we have we're accepting the economic conditions, but we surely would want to say security and risk management, IT, library service in our various courts, and our language services, and municipal rates and taxes will still be a problem. If local authorities increase the tariffs with 20 or 30%, then we will be quite a problem. Thank you, Chairperson.
That's the end of our presentation. And there's something very important I forgot to mention, Chair. I should have apologized from behalf of our Director General. He's attending to some matters with the Public Service Commission. Thank you. We are ready for questions today.
Honourable members, you can engage with the report, Honourable Matilda.
Chair, firstly, let us welcome the presentation. There are a lot of issues that has been raised in as far as the presentation is concerned. There are a lot of worrying factors in the presentations. You know, what we hear the presentation is giving us, it's not exactly what is happening on the ground. In the first place, in terms of their strategic plan, they are not telling us as to how many magistrates are acting and for how long. And when are they going to be appointed full time? That is the first area. They are talking about job creation. The call around the presidents around creating jobs. Now what we would want to have, Chair, is the exact numbers throughout the whole country, the payload that those magistrates have been acting, and why were they not appointed. That is the first area. The second area is around the transformation. Well, I have said it several times when we met with the Magistrates Commission, when we met with the department, in terms of the transformation of the Magistrates Commission. It's not mentioned here. It's white mills. There's no the confederation of the country and all those things. That is what we have there. I know, just last week I was talking to the Deputy Minister about exactly what is happening at the Pretoria Minister's Court. About why are there no black people dealing with this other section, the civil service, civil cases, because we don't know what those white people are doing in that specific area. And it has been a complaint all along. I visited the Pretoria Magistrates Courts. It's not telling us about anything else. The third thing is that I have gone to Mamelodi with the Deputy Minister. The previous minister has turned soil there. A fence has been erected. A building has been started. Was to be started. We don't know what has happened to that process. But there was budget around it. What happened to that budget, we don't know. But here we are told about building new courts. Millions have been set aside. We're talking about the maintenance of specific courts. We don't know which ones are they referring to. You see, the problem we have is like in local government, is the trend is just the same. That in the affluent areas, you'll always have maintenance and all that, you know, and the justice system is just the same. Now, you know, we are told today that there's new money coming in, they are going to do one, but the Defense Department has been underspending from 2003 to 2004, has been underspending. We are not sure as to what is it that they are doing. In actual fact, I would have loved to have seen the head of this department going to jail, because it's a crime to underspend. Because the accounting officer is not accountable. No, I'm just saying these are part of the issues that the strat plan and the budget is not telling us. You know, even the last financial year, they've underspent. Just the last financial year. Now, we always get this glossy, good presentations from the department. Now, I'm just saying as part of an introduction, Chair, to all the questions, because I have hundreds of questions to the department, the budget itself. You know, it's not clear. You are going to create jobs, this is what you think you are going to do, when, there are no timelines, there's nothing around those specific issues. You know. Now, this is what you think you want to do. Now, if you meet with different units, we're getting different pictures from what you're telling us today. We're also not sure as to whether the department has thought this through, planned correctly, dealt with the issues, and have a clear vision as to what is it that they want to achieve at the end of the day. I mean, you're talking about bedlocks in the courts. We're not sure as to how many vacancies you have, how ready are you to deal with those particular bedlocks. Because the reality of the matter is, you have a lot of actors than people that must mean an implement. I mean, I had a difficult case last week dealing with the department, where a magistrate, because he's acting for a specific period, he has been there for the last 4 years, acting in your department, an advocate at the Pretoria Magistrates Courts. Precisely because he was supposed to be promoted to the civil service, a white magistrate from the head of the courts, whilst he was talking to, he was being told that they think they want to promote him to that specific position, a white female magistrate phoned and said no, it can't happen. That particular person had to suffer certain consequences. Now, he has been appointed from just last week. For a period of 3-4 weeks, he has been working in the department. He has not been paid for that. You see? Now, these are part of the problems that you have, precisely because people are gatekeeping, people are doing a lot of other things. And sometimes we're told here that I'm not sure which jurisdiction do you have. You have no control about over what. We don't know. Maybe if you can expand that particular situation that you have indicated that in terms of the judiciary, you might not have specific powers to deal with specific issues. We don't know what is it that you have powers on. You see? Now, those are the issues that emerge from the Justice Department. Now, if magistrates are not dealt with justifiably so, do you think the courts can deal with these things fairly? Do you think so? Because the people that has to deliver judgments, has to deal with and deal with those things fairly, are dealt with in this unjust way. Is that the situation? And I'm just saying, in terms of transformation, that's part of the whole process. No? How do you deal with that particular situation? Che, I thought, let me stop there. I'll come back, because I know I have hundreds of questions. If some of the issues can just be clarified for us, we can then go into the specifics. Thank you, Che.
Thank you very much for this time. Indeed, in principle, I would agree with my colleague here that the presentation has got most issues that I raised, like on your annual performance plan. It's a broad issue, but it is not linked to specific targets. It might be difficult to tie the department for the coming engagement to say how far with this, as he said, there are no targets. I think that is important. Maybe to give an example, one does not understand how do we link on how do we align the presentation with the JCPS delivery agreement, which are very, very important. I think the department needs to go and work detailed, like for example of the cost. You can't just say cost, you need to measure to say by this year we're going to build 10 courts, so that we're able to say we've been able to build 10 courts, or we couldn't because of this factor. That's very important. We might not be able to come and do it oversight the way it is. It's a nice presentation with good English, but in terms of we ordinary literate, we would also want to be able to quickly say, no, they said 10 courts here, let me go and check where. So those details are not here. The other thing is the various objectives. One objective is unqualified report. I mean, unqualified audit. From what? From various qualifications. I think from 2005 or so, the report talks of various qualifications that we read in terms of our research. But how do we make sure? Because just to say unqualified audit is an expression. It needs to be tied objective scientifically to say we are going to achieve this way. Are we going to sustain that? Presently, the sustainability of finances of our department is that we are sustaining qualifications. I think that one needs to be collectively cleared really, so that we are able to understand. And I'm sure that the department will need our approval. And we don't just want to approve for cooperation. We want to really approve what we know that to be done, because we pass budget. The department implements. The other issue, of course, the colleague has raised it. I won't mention that. The other issue that I would want to get to the clarity is how do the department of labor come to mind in terms of that line? I've seen what they mean, what they have. But who protect the independence of Chapter 9 in terms of what they're saying. It's the Chapter 9 aspect, branches of the department, do they have independence? In fact, how do they relate? Because there's an outside the process in the country that similarly Chapter 9s are somewhere, somehow suppressed. And yet we've created them as a parliament that we need these Chapter 9s to be independent and do that. For example, just recent, the public protector issue. The department was not that much, you know, it was not talking too much on that, whether this department, I mean this institution is indeed a South African institute or is an opposite of mine. It needs to be clear. Because the other thing, we wouldn't like want to see Chapter 9 institute losing their independence simply because they will be absorbed by the department with whatever mechanism that they're having. I think that must be clear. Because we would want to see Chapter 9 remaining independent. I don't know whether their budget are given by the department or they get their budget separately from the treasury. I think that type of thing must be clear. The issue of disability, it doesn't come out here. Because court are not court for abled people. How far are we dealing with the access to disability? It's very much important. Are they accessible? Because as we move around doing our oversight on them, you could see that we're still using the stairs in most cases to court. You don't see, some do have, but some do not have. Do we have a specific ticket to deal with this problem? It needs to be captured. That is, by this time, all courts will be accessible. So that even the plan of the new court should be inclusive of the access, so that you don't plan court and thereafter come and deal with disability issues. It's very much important that you need to say it in your report. If you, for us to be able to approve your thing. Because to me, I'm afraid that before we approve, we need the department to go and give us specific detailed targets that are linked to APP. Otherwise, well, what are we approving? If we can take this thing as this to those that know better than us and say critique, we'll see more and more challenges that are still, you know, outstanding. Case deadlocks. I think this is very much also, you know, challenging issues. How far are we now? How much we had in 2010-2011 budget? How many cases were outstanding? How many have we reduced? Where are we? It's a challenge. People get arrested, stay in court, prison for a long time, you know? And nothing's done. We need to break this thing. The job creation issue was raised. The department somewhere is talking about vacancies who are in between 8%, 9% vacancy rate. Now there's an addition in terms of the call of the president that we must create jobs. How are we going to tackle that, you know, the current vacancies and the new vacancies that we are envisaging in order to contribute to the job creation in this country? I think my fundamental issue is that of specific targets, the vagueness of certain objectives. Then I think some of the objectives need to be reworked so that we are able to say this is what is going to happen. So that it don't imply, you know, don't even try. I think that must be the rule. I think the last thing, in the budget, there's an allocation for state law advisors. Do we also consider capacity of these law advisors? Precisely because they advise the state, but in some cases the state lose cases in court. Do we appoint them, capacitate them, so that they understand their legal imperatives with the objective of the department, the entire state? Because from time to time we get defeated in court, even our own court, even though it was like we have three separate branches. Judiciary is independent, we build part of the state. It's always defeated at constitutional court, always turn our cases out. For example, we just from the topic, who advised us to take that type of what we said before? That's why I'm talking of capacity of state local advisors. We just come from reading newspapers, MPA, the Scorpion issue, the Hawks. I think this is, if we had people with capacity who are employed by the state, by the department, some of these cases would see them even before, so we might not be able to be constitutionally correct if we take this type of decision. I think these are some of the things that I'm hearing. Because as we engage, we might have to make some follow-ups.
I think my colleague has just brought up a very important area around the state advice. It was just the last case, Chair, around the people that sat in prison for 19 years who were, because judges sometimes take political decisions, part of a political process. But the state law advisors misled the Minister of Correctional Services to go to the Constitutional Court and do something that she wasn't supposed to do. And in terms of capacity, you know. But also, when these people are appointed, how are they appointed, who appoints them, you know, all those things, because do you check their credentials and all those things? But you see, one point that I wanted to raise, does the department want to join, I'm sure my colleagues from the DA are not here, but if they were here, I would have mentioned it correctly, that do you want to become financial compliance, or do you want to deliver services? Because here the DA Council is financial compliance, but they don't deliver services. Is the department, because in terms of your presentation, that's what you are telling us, because you want to become financial compliance and not deliver services. Yes. Now, you know that there's a huge difference of becoming financial compliance and deliver services, because you need to do both at the same time, deliver services and become financial compliance. But in terms of what we get from your presentation is you just want to become financial compliance because you want a clean audit, that's it. And that's what the DA is doing in the Western Cape. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Matila. To add to the question that has been posed and maybe seek specific responses with regard to the question of disability that was raised. There was a court judgment in 2004 that by 2009, all the courts should be user-friendly to the people with disability. What has the department done to ensure compliance with that court ruling? And the other issue is the issue of the building of two courts per annum. Faced with these challenges, are two courts per annum enough to ensure that the department is as effective. Making an example with the statement that was made by the senior judge in the Western Cape, that as a result of the backlogs, 20 courts will be needed only in the Western Cape to deal with the cases, with the backlog of the cases. Now the department says it intends to build two courts per annum. Taking the statement from the department and that one from the from the judge who is dealing with these cases on a daily basis, do we have to say the department is indeed serious in addressing the challenges that are facing the Department of Justice? More especially taking into cognizance the FIFA World Cup experience, where in building some of the stadiums and the airports and the road construction, there were specific deadlines, and the government met some of those specific deadlines. What is difficult with the department to ensure that it uses that experience to ensure that the building of the courts and the renovations speeded up? And the DVA, you also mentioned the issue of the TRC. The progress that is made thus far. But what came into my mind is, what is the department doing to inform the people who were declared victims of human rights abuses with that progress? I think you can respond, and maybe we will ask other questions as you respond.
Thank you very much for the questions and feedback. It's really appreciated. We will try to respond to all the questions where we can, and I think where we can't, we will request that we be allowed to submit for our reports, so that we can give sufficient detail on our response. I'll try to take a few, and I think questions will be shared with who are all here. Just starting with your questions, Chair, the on the TRC, I think that we need to do a lot more to inform victims. At the moment, our engagement has just been with Parliament and NGOs. We are working on a program to engage particularly community radio stations. I think our focus was not so much to inform victims of progress, but to just strengthen our efforts to address some of the victims who still need to be paid, reparations and so on. But I think we will do much to inform victims of progress. We have already submitted, I think, a report to Parliament on TRC, on the progress that has been made since 2008 on this matter. But I think we would be more active in the media. Chair, the issue of two courts per annum, whether that is enough, I think we would agree with you, that is not enough. We would need a lot more. And I agree with you about the FIFA World Cup experience. However, if you look at our budget, is very, very limited, because on the budget, and maybe Chief Director later on will just show you the constraints we have. But on the current budget that we have, we not only have to build in terms of capital works, we have to rehabilitate some costs, we have to maintain some costs and so on. And we are severely constrained. And that's why, for example, costs like the Mamelodi costs had to be delayed, because we just have to prioritize. Another moment, we are simply working on three clusters according to Suma. In KZN, we are working on Mpumalanga and we are working on Polokwane High Court. Simply because of the conference, but I think the Chief Director Facilities would indicate where we are in terms of those projects. There was a question raised about whether we want to be financially compliant or we want to deliver services. Frankly, Honorable Member, this is not a choice we can make. I think we have to do both. We have to do both because we operate within a particular framework, legislative framework in the particular PFA maybe one and relevant regulations, but also as well as deliver services to the best of our ability. And if you recall our presentation, whilst we did mention, as you correctly pointed out, the issue of a no audit qualification, and I will address it later, we also indicated that our strategic plan prioritizes improvement of services, particularly in the maintenance areas, as well as master services and so on. And then collecting those areas, we'll talk further about this. So we want to do both. In terms of how we relate to Chapter 9, Chair, as you know, our minister has a mandate to oversee Chapter 9 as Minister of Justice and Constitution. And therefore, they have an obligation to report it from our minister about their performance. But they still maintain their independence, as I understand it, because they also have to account to Parliament on their work. And in terms of the budget really, we are just a conduit. Treasury puts their budget on the budget of the Department of Justice to serve as a conduit to Chapter 9. I think this is a matter, if I recall, and I'm speaking under correction. This was one of the things that were considered by the CADA ASMAL committee that was reviewing Chapter 9. But my understanding is that the report is still in Parliament. It still has not been finalized. But I think my colleague, Peter Juran, or maybe after the third one, will say more about this issue. There was a question about the unqualified audit, about from what do we want to be unqualified from. I indicated earlier in the presentation that for the financial year 08-09, we were qualified on five issues. This was third party funds, irregular expenditure, leases, leave, as well as assets. But I indicated that in the last financial year, we reduced our qualification from five issues to two. These are third party funds and irregular expenditure. And I further indicated that we have a long term plan which will culminate in us having a twin audit by financial year 2012-2013. And we will achieve that by ensuring that, with regard to third party funds in particular, we would have created the necessary capacity, particularly in the various costs, to make sure that we improve our capacity for financial management. We would have put systems in place, particularly accounting systems in place. We would have automated the manual records that we are using in the various courts. But also with regard to irregular expenditure, I indicated that from November 2010, we had started applying correct legislation insofar as our supply chain management is concerned. And we have also significantly increased capacity. Not only in the supply chain management area, but in the office of the Chief Financial Officer, in a sense that we have recently appointed three chief directors and one director and staff at the local level. And I think our expenditure since 2003-2008 has been improved significantly. I think the acting CFO would indicate that in the last two financial years we're above 95%. 99% in terms of expenditure. In terms of the job creation targets, Chair, the presentation that the acting CFO made, the targets that he was specifically looking at, these are the expenditure for 2011-2012 also. These are the posts we'll be creating in the financial reporting and reporting company. And there was a question about the lack of specificity in terms of targets and so on. I think I indicated that the framework we are now using was only issued in August 2010 by Treasury. But in terms of the new directives from Treasury, we have been requested to submit our annual performance plans by end of April. And I've indicated that we now have a draft annual performance plan which will take all the operational plans that business branches would have taken, and it will be more specific. But I think maybe Lebogang Phahlele will say a little bit more about where we are with the performance plan and how we are trying to make it specific. So I will then let colleagues maybe just to zero in on other questions that we have. I don't know who would want to start. I advocate to run.
Thank you, Chair. Also thank you for the questions that have been posed. If I can perhaps just address some of the issues relating to the acting magistrates. I think if we look at acting magistrates, we've got different categories of people that are acting. In the first place, we've got those people that are acting whilst the posts are vacant. And in this regard, for the past financial year, we had about 91 posts where there were vacancies in terms of the lower courts, where there were a need for people to be appointed whilst the advertisements goes out and interviews are being held, etc., and the filling of those posts are being dealt with. Secondly, we had also on a daily basis, countrywide, we have a situation where we need to appoint magistrates that are ill replacements for those magistrates. So that's a second category of acting magistrates. On a daily basis, where there might be a person that's ill for that day, we need to replace him so that the work can continue. Thirdly, we also have a category of acting magistrates that are appointed on a contract basis to give additional capacity. And that's specifically where we're dealing with a backlog of cases. In this regard, we instituted a specific project where we received additional money from Treasury to appoint additional capacity in the courts so that we have additional courts that can run and deal with the cases that are outstanding for a long period of time. In this regard, we've appointed 56 regional court magistrates and 17 district court magistrates, and we will be continuing with those appointments in this new financial year, plus we will be adding to them with the funding that we have received. But when we appoint an acting magistrate in this regard, we also appoint a prosecutor, an interpreter, a clerk to deal with the court machinery and the other court clerk work, and we also from legal aid side appoint a legal representative so that we have a full staff complement for a court to run. So that is the third category of acting appointments that we deal with in terms of magistrates. In terms of the aspect relating to...
Chair, just on that point, Chair, it will be important for us, Chair, to get, because this is what the request we want. My experience is that there are magistrates that has been acting for the last 5 years. And in terms of renewing their contracts, you disrupt their lives. Because they are human beings. They've got families. They've got all those things. That's what you do. I've just given you an example of a magistrate in Pretoria, who for a month did not get a salary. It has to, complicate his life and all those things. He's just been appointed for a show, and he has been there for the last 4 years, Either you agree with him that he goes, so that he goes into private practice rather than keeping him there. Those are the problems. And once you are sitting with, and this is what you are saying to us, you are sitting with a prosecutor who has no job now, who's just lingering there because the magistrate is not operational for that specific court. You're sitting with a clerk of the court, you're sitting with whatever, that whoever, the people you are talking about, you see. at the same time you're using the same magistrate as a clerk, and you're not paying him. You know, I'm just saying you're complicating people's lives unnecessarily whilst there are vacancies, because we want to deal with bedlocks. But for a month, we have not dealt with the bedlocks in terms of that specific court that we're talking about, you see. And what we want now is for the entire country, before we zoom into Pretoria, because of the racist approach in the Pretoria Magistrates Court, you know, we want to know, in terms of the entire country, give us specifics. How many are they? Who are they? For how long have they been on contract, so that we deal with the specific, with those specific issues. So that you see, you deal with the job creation, the appointment of people permanently in the terms of the department, because if you have a person on a contract basis for 4 years, it means you have got a budget. That's what it means at the end of the day. You know? Now, why don't you appoint that person? If you don't want him, why don't you advertise and get the agreement and appoint the correct person that you need? You see, those are the issues that we want to deal with. Because you are telling us about this year. We want to tell you about the last 5 years. This is what you have been doing. And we think it is incorrect.
Maybe Mr. Durant, can you also explain, if a person acts for the past 4 years, as honorable member says, are you not creating an expectation that he must, maybe he's suitable for that job, and with the experience that he has acquired for the past years, why don't you appoint him?
Thank you very much, Jay. Let me try and just put it in proper perspective. Those people that have been acting for a considerable period, like for example the mention that you made over 4 years, yes, there are such people, but they are on the specific backlog project where we've appointed since 2006, November. We've been appointing people on contract. Those appointments are renewed on a regular basis, because the Act provides that the minister or the deputy minister who's been delegated that authority can only appoint a person 3 months at a time. So after 3 months, his position is re-evaluated, and if there's a requirement, then they are reappointed. Now, some of those have been appointed for 4 years. But when they were appointed, they knew very well that these are not permanent posts, because it's a specific project to help down work, to work down the backlogs that are in existence. They applied for those posts on the basis that it is a contract post and that it is renewed. So they've been doing that for the past 2 or 3 years, and they know full well their situation. Many of those people are attorneys or advocates or private practitioners, etc. At any point in time, when there is a vacancy that's from a permanent post, any of those people can apply for those posts, and some of them have done so, and some of them have been appointed on a permanent basis. So it's not like that's been excluded from it, but it's their choice whether they want to continue on that acting post or not. What we've done to increase the establishment, because there is a need to have a greater establishment, the fact that we have more than 56 regional court magistrates shows that there is a need for additional posts. So in that regard, for the past financial year, I think 12 additional regional court posts on a permanent basis was created. Those posts were advertised, and I think they have been either filled or they're in the process of being filled. We've asked that further posts be created, both in the regional court and the district courts, and we are dealing with that in conjunction with the Magistrates Commission and the magistrates, chief of magistrates that are there countrywide. So we're trying to increase the establishment where there will be more posts, so that people can deal with those things on an acting on a permanent basis and not on an acting basis. For our side, we don't want acting magistrates, because it's not a satisfactory type of situation. We want permanent magistrates that can deal with that. The situation that was mentioned regarding the Pretoria magistrate who didn't receive salary, that's something we can go into, because from our side, there is normally no issue. The magistrates, if they are working for the month, they get paid for that month. There's normally not many issues relating to those payments, so we'll just follow up on that specific issue and why there was perhaps a challenge.
Just on this particular matter. You see, The Magistrate Commission has been appearing before us, bringing a number of cases. Pretoria is a case to mention. There's a number of magistrates who are acting in Pretoria because of victimization and whatever that has happened in the Pretoria Magistrates' Courts. No? Now, I'm saying, from the look of things, there are a lot of vacancies there. No? Because you can't have a lot of actors there, you know, film stars there, you know, in the Pretoria Magistrates' Court. You know? And that is the situation. I'm just saying, if that is the picture that is painted to us, because we have a lot of cases that are coming before us from the Magistrates' Commission. You know? And if that is the picture in the Pretoria Magistrates' Court, what is happening countrywide? You know, and that's what we want to hear, we want to understand, so that, you know, I don't understand you when you say a person can be on contract, on a 3-month contract for 4 years, yeah? And if there's no vacancy in that particular court, you know, and in Pretoria in particular, there's Mafafu, there's Watwat, who chose to leave the Pretoria because of the racist approach in that particular court. You see, there's a number of them. What we're dealing with a lot of cases from Pretoria, you know, and that is the picture we're trying to be. We are worried about what is happening countrywide, you know, because of the example that Pretoria is giving us. You see, now that is the picture. Now I'm just saying, if you have a lot of film stars in Pretoria, you know, what is the vacancy rate there? And give us that picture. And so that we understand what is happening countrywide, because you want to create jobs, but you don't want to. And that's the picture you're telling us. You want to create jobs, you want to create, but you don't want to do it, because you want to keep people in. You can't have a person for 5 years on a 3-month contract, for 5 years, and keep him for the next 5 years on a 3-month contract, without any other benefits. That is unfair to that particular person. And because you have created an expectation, I mean, for 5 years, you have created an expectation that there is a vacancy in this particular court.
Thank you, Jay. Just before you continue, Mr. Durant.
Just to add, you know, when the Magistrate Commission appeared before us, why even talk, why do we create these commissions for what? If Parliament can assist. But the information that they say will be done is the one that would help assist the challenges in the Ministerial Commission report that we got. But the other thing is that I think by lack of moving fast, we encourage this corruption issue. Because a person who is not sure of the future and the person is not sure of where this, am I going to get money. They will do something like this, the example that the colleague is in many places at local areas. If magistrates are like that, most of them, that's where we get bribery, fraud, whatnot, and all sorts of things. But if you give them duty to do, and they do it, you are legitimately going to be able to deal with it. I think it's very much important without arguing to note this point that this matter must be done. And we want to have the picture of the entire country, not only Pretoria. What's happening in Johannesburg, what's happening in Cape Town, Durban, what all stuff. You know, it's very much important. Because this legislature, as a branch of the state, is there to complement what the executive is going to be doing. Without fear or favor. And it's a complementary process, this one. You know? We're not supposed to be oppositional to each other. We are supposed to be complementary. But we can't compromise where we need a particular information. I think it's important that we need this information so that we are able to say, if need be, call the minister, say, Chief, this is what's happening in your department. So that we politically engage with the minister and say, this is what we want to do by what? It's very much. Also, to our various caucuses and parties, we must engage on this matter and say, we want this thing to happen. so that the political, we know that you are at the level of a democrat, you are bureaucrat of the minister. But if things are not moving, we must call the minister here and say, this is what your department is doing. Don't worry. I think it's what's important to say. We needed that answer.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just continue? I think I realize where the members are coming from. And from our side, we'll try and give you in writing the list of vacancies countrywide, etc., as you've required, with the stats, etc. I think we need to bear in mind, however, that one, the department do not appoint the magistrates. It's dealt with by the Magistrates Commission. So the vacancies and how they deal with those vacancies are part of their scope of work. The department, what we do from our side is to make sure that there is funding to deal with the court infrastructure, to make sure that if there is a need for an additional court to be proclaimed and an additional magistrate to be appointed, that there is a clerk, the infrastructure, the interpreter, all the other aspects dealing with it. But the actual filling of the vacancies is not something that the department is specifically involved with. It goes from the Magistrates Commission to the Minister, and even if the magistrate is removed, we don't play a role in terms of that. At the end of the day, it's a role of Parliament that deals with the removal. And I think that's also why the Magistrates Commission appear before you, because they deal with those aspects. But from our side, we'll assist you with statistics in terms of the various issues that you have raised. In terms of the backlogs, and I just want to make that point, we are appointing those people that come from private practice because in many of those instances they can't deal with the work that they have at their level, and therefore they apply for these posts and deal with it. But we deal with it on an acting basis specifically because we have ring-fenced funds from Treasury to deal with it on a temporary basis. They can take that money away at any time. So we can only deal with it on a period-to-period basis, and we do it on a year-to-year basis, basically. At the end of the year, Treasury looks at how those courts have been doing, and then they either allocate funding or they remove it, and they deal with the same from the prosecuting side and legal aid SA side. But Chair, if I can perhaps just continue, I think we'll give you those statistics, and then if necessary we can interrogate that more and give you more assistance, because the statistics are available and we can assist you with that. I just don't have them countrywide per place or per city as such, but we will be able to give that to you in writing very quickly.
Chair, thank you. I think when we ask these questions, we are coming from a particular point of departure. They are coming from the presentation. What magistrate will be appointed? This will be done. On that basis, it's your responsibility to know whether they are appointed or not. Because you are giving them money. You're giving commission money and whatever. It's very much important that it's part of the indicator that will judge your department. Because it's here. We'll be using it. What call the commission? We'll call commission on their own things. You know? I think that's important.
Thank you, Chair. I think we note that. From our side, the money that we've covered here is for the additional magistrates on an acting appointment in terms of the backlogs. The other salaries for magistrates come from the National State Revenue Fund, not directly as part of our vote. So we didn't deal with those and the vacancies that are part of that. Those we didn't deal with per se.
Chair, in terms of this specific vote, I would suggest that in terms of particularly this point, that both the Magistrates Commission and the Department are brought back and give presentations around these specific issues. Because you see, the Department can't tell us that this is what they want to do whilst they don't have powers over those specific areas. You see? And I think there's a disjuncture there. Because if you don't have powers over a specific area, how do we implement that? How do you want to achieve that particular situation? Now, before we deal with this specific vote, both of them, both role players must then be here so that we understand what is it that they are going to do, you see, because there are different responsibilities between the department and the Magistrates Commission. Thank you, Chair.
You can continue, Mr. Dura.
Thank you, Chair. If I could perhaps just turn to some of the other aspects. In terms of the transformation of the magistrates, I think we've appointed a new, the minister appointed a new head of the Magistrates Commission, and I think we will see, obviously, as part and parcel of that, further improvements in terms of the breakdown of magistrates as they are currently. Perhaps just an indication of the current race and gender breakdown, if that can assist the committee. At the moment, we have approximately 1,694 magistrates. In terms of that, we have approximately 579, or 34% black males. We have, in terms of, I added the wrong number. Let me just start again. In terms of the African males, we have 442 African males, which is 26%. We have 249 African females, which is 15%. We have 60 male Indians, 89 Indian females. We have 77 colored males. We have 52 colored females, 478 white males, and 247 white females. That brings us to a total of 1,694. In terms of this, the aggregated percentages is black generic males is 34%, white males 28%, and then in terms of black generic females, 23%, white females 15%. I think that is the percentage in terms of the magistrates. So there has been improvement, although not in the type of numbers that we would have liked to see, but there is some improvement into as to previous years. In terms of the judges, there's the same situation. If I can perhaps give an indication, we have 226 judges. Of them, we've got 70 male Africans, 22 African females, 14 male coloured, 7 female coloured, male Indian 10, Indian female 12, and then white male 73 and female 18, bringing us to a total of 226 in general. Once again, I think the aspect in terms of that I tried to make.
Just a moment. It's interesting to get those figures. Just 2 weeks ago, I was at the Constitutional Court. In terms of the judges, there's no problem. The assistants to judges, you only had 3 black people and the rest were white. Of the more than 30 to 40 people that were sitting in front, the assistant to the Constitutional Court, and I'm not sure as to what is bringing that difference, you know. And that is because we were shocked, you chair yourself. You were seated there, shocked, looking at that particular picture. You know, when we went to the clarification around the judgment that was given around the 1994. Lifers and whatever, you know, and that is the picture we observe there. But you are giving us very nice picture, a very nice picture, whilst the reality on the ground is not so, in terms of what is happening in those particular courts. But be as it may, that is the situation.
Thank you, Chair. I was dealing specifically with the judicial appointments, not the assistants, etc. I do not have those information, but for the Constitutional Court, as it was mentioned, we can go into that and just have an indication of what is the situation there, and that led to that picture. If I can perhaps just deal with some of the other aspects, in terms of the backlog cases and the delivery agreement, if I can perhaps just turn to the backlog situation, then it's quite clear that what we've tried to do is to work down the backlogs that we have had over the past few years. And in this regard, we've managed to reduce the number of outstanding cases, but for a long period of time on a reasonable basis. We've met the targets that we have set, and we've tried to set that we meet at least a decrease those backlogs by about 10% per year, and we've managed that since 2006. In some instances, we've even gone beyond that. But if we look at the past financial year, for example, we see that in particular we had a specific reduction as a result of these additional magistrates and prosecutors that we had. Can just bear with me for a second. We managed to, where we previously had about 38,000 backlog cases countrywide for 2009-10, we've managed to reduce that to at the end of 31 December to 35,000, with a percentage of where we previously had about 18 to 19% backlogs countrywide to about 16%. So in the financial year that's gone past, we've managed to reduce the backlog by more than 12,000 cases alone. In total, since we've started, we've managed to reduce the backlogs by more than 30,000. So these people that have been there on that acting appointments, as I've indicated, have helped to work down these roles substantially. If we didn't have this additional capacity, those cases would still have been on the roll, and we would still have had to deal with them with the normal cases. But I really want to put before you, and that's something that can also be posed to the Magistrates Commission when you recall it, and that is that the problem that we have is not just a person problem in terms of numbers of people. It's also the productivity of courts. And what has been one of the challenging aspects is that the courts are not sitting enough hours, and they're not finalizing enough cases. And that's why we have a backlog. And we've pitched that now to the Chief Justice, and we've also presented that to the various judge presidents and regional court presidents and chief magistrates, indicating to them that they need to help deal with the management of the case roles in such a way that we have more time spent in courts and that we finalize more cases. Because if we don't deal with that in that sense, then obviously it's going to be an issue.
I want to agree with him, but you see, the problem is in terms of your strategy. For an example, if one magistrate has to deal with 40 cases in one day and have four trials in one day, you know, and a trial might take 4 or 5 days. For an example, I stay in Mamelodi. You have got two courts there that has to deal with criminal, whatever, all those cases. And if it's a peak period, when I'm talking peak period, it's long weekends and whatever. If all those cases have to come and there are trials, whatever, how do they? Because you will never deal with the backlogs. You see, that's one problem. Because if you have to go through a trial, and you have bail applications, you have all those things to come before you, you're going to postpone all those other cases so that you can deal with a trial. Or you will postpone the trial. The picture I want you to give to us, so that when we deal with the Magistrates Commission, there are people that has been sitting in those prisons awaiting trials for more than 4 years, up to 10 years. We don't know what's the problem around dealing with those specific cases and all those. If we can have a picture, you know, a picture around those specific cases, how many are they, what is happening, which areas and whatever, so that when we deal with the magistrates or the judiciary, you know, we are able to can pick up those specific issues to assist you as a department to make sure that the point you have raised, that in terms of the sitting hours and all those, you know, we are able to can press upon them to deal with those specific issues, you know. But we don't have a picture. We know we had a proof crossed that prison 2 weeks ago. The complaint we received from the prison authorities is that they have a lot of awaiting trials sitting for years in those particular prisons. And those are the people that are causing overcrowding in prisons, and unnecessarily so, precisely because of the inefficiency of the judiciary or the investigating unit of SAPS. You know, there are those two areas, and we can't pick that up precisely because we don't have sufficient information either from yourselves or the department or from anywhere else so that we can deal with the necessary the specific areas, and so we can challenge that specific units or departments in dealing with those specific issues, because it is unfair for a person to sit in prison for 10 years. And I just specifically said injustice was done to people who sat in prison for 19 years having done nothing, precisely because of the judiciary has failed them and the country has failed them, you know. And we need to come in and deal with that specific area. And for a person to sit who has not committed anything else, to sit to be on a waiting trial for 10 years sitting in a prison, and then they're going to be acquitted because he has not done anything else, you can imagine what cost is there to government to make sure that this person is paid. You know, he might sue the government, he might do all those things.
Thank you, Chair. I think once again very valuable comment that has been made, and we'll try to see how we can incorporate that in our statistics and information we present to you. But perhaps just to give you a little bit of perspective regarding the remand detainees, as some of the figures that I have before me. If we look at the moment, we have about 47,000 people that are awaiting trial, or remand detainees as we are now called, in the various prisons or correctional centres throughout the country. Now, if we look at that number, then the number of people that are there for longer than 21 months are only 676. So the majority of those people are less than 18 months. If we look at the number of people that are there for a shorter period than 9 months, we find that 79% of all awaiting trial are there for only 1 to 9 months. If we look at the actual number, it's 39,238 of them are there for less than 9 months. So the situation that we've tried to do from our side is to focus on those that are there for longer than a year and 2 years, etc. We've been working down all of those that have been there for 7 years and 6 years and 5 years, trying to push the judiciary and the other role players to finalize those as quickly as possible. But we'll give you this so that you have a proper picture on the latest statistics from Correctional Services. Chair, perhaps my colleagues can try and deal with some of the other assistance. Just the one aspect that I want to touch on is the alignment with the JCPS delivery agreement. Our strategy is aligned to that. What we've done is to make sure that in our strategy we have those elements of the cluster agreement that are relevant to us and to the other departments built into it, and make sure that we deal with it. One of those are, for example, increased case finalization, but we make sure that between us and the prosecutors, we monitor that and look at that and make sure that it is dealt with. The same with regard to the backlog of cases, which is another pressure area, but also in terms of all the other elements that are part and parcel of the JCPS delivery agreement. We've tried to make sure that all the various departments, whether it's a prosecuting authority or justice, all the legal aid, all the police, that they all have part of their strategic plans, those elements that are required to make the delivery agreement work in practice. So I think that alignment has been established. But perhaps I can turn to some of my colleagues. So let's see.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a bit difficult to deal with facilities management without maybe being tempted to justify the position that the department finds itself in. I think we need to also understand that when we look at our infrastructure allocation throughout the country, especially where courts are concerned, they still very much reflect the previous order in terms of where you find that infrastructure were mostly situated in the so-called affluent area. And the places like Mamelodi, which have traditionally been only assumed to require only criminal services, that's where you will find that you do not have facilities or sufficient facilities for services such as civil matters and your family related matters. So we have to look at it in that context, and we are not very proud to say that after 16 years we still have that. And the reason being that there has not been an effort to actually allocate funds specifically related to address such a problem. And just to note the issue of the Mamelodi specifically, you are right to say that there have been some trouble that took place for Mamelodi. Unfortunately, at that time, we assumed that the planning process would be complete in time for us to go out on tender and be able to appoint. What happens is, as you're very much aware, we depend on Public Works as our implementing agent. By the time the project was ready for going out on tender, that is the time when the department could not be able to carry the cash flow related to the expenditure. The budget was set aside, but remember, the budget is not only set aside for a specific project, it is set aside for a number of projects. Now, the reason I'm saying that we have to also look at the dependency that we have with Public Works is that as much as the department might put aside funds for a project, if Public Works is not complete with their planning process, that means that the project cannot go on. Now, what normally happens in such a case, and which is the case in Mamelodi, is that while we had planned as a department to have the project going out and for construction in 2009-2010, because it was not ready, we had other projects that were ready for implementation. And as you very much aware, construction projects are multi-year projects. That means that we now have to commit projects, funds on projects that are ready for implementation. And unfortunately, by the time Mamelodi was ready for construction, the funds that we have, limited funds that we have, were already committed on ongoing projects. Now, what we're trying to do with regard to Mamelodi and others that are affected by the budget constraint is that we're trying to finish the projects that we have currently on where we have contractors on site. And hopefully we should be able to finish them in time so that we can be able to offload them, because they've been put on hold because we cannot afford to carry the expenditure cash flow, the expected cash flow that goes with that.
No, Chair, I want to thank the honest answer from at least today for the first time. Even the Deputy Minister was misled, because I was with him when he was given different answers to what you are giving us today. That is the first error. But you see, I don't understand as to why you turn the soil here, you know, and you do a number of things, then you bring in mobile structures that are very hot, you know, at the very cost. It's costly to bring in those things rather than building, you know. I'm not sure who is dealing with your procurement processes, you know, because if you have started that structure with what you have brought into Mamelodi in dealing with civil matters and all those things, you know, you would have dealt with that specific court, you know. Is that not a waste that the department is creating? You know, I'm just checking that, you see, because you have erected the fence, you have done a lot of other things there, engineers went in, everything has gone in there, you know? And then you stop immediately, then you bring in mobile structures. You can go to Mamelodi, just next to the police station again, you have erected mobile structures there, you know. They are very hot, people can sit in them and all those things. And I'm just saying, is that not a waste that the department is creating, or your unit is creating, you know? Because what will happen if you build, what's going to happen to those mobile structures? Destroy them? Leave them there? You know, those are type of the issues. I think there's a planning problem in the department. You are now budgeting 400 million for Polokwane, budgeting 400 million for Mpumalanga. But you say you have started a project here, you can't finish. You don't have the money, but you have money for these new projects. I'm just saying,
there's something wrong with the department in terms of planning. You know, we know there's an urgent need for a higher court in Limpopo. There's an urgent need for a higher court in Mpumalanga, precisely because you can't have people traveling all along from those specific faraway areas to Pretoria to come to a high court. You know, we understand those particular needs, but your planning is just not on. You know, and I think we must go and sit down and rethink. You must not start projects that you can't finish. You can imagine what does that community say today. You know, the minister called them, there was a big imbizo, you fed them with food and all those things. Is that not a waste? You should have waited.
Continue, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the comment, and yes, we have to admit that we also do have a bit of a problem with regard to planning. But as I've also said, our planning has to be in line with the capability of our implementing agent being public works. It doesn't matter how good our planning is, but if our implementing agents are not ready to implement our plan, then our plan is obviously going to be out of sync. But we do take that into account. We appreciate the contribution. More or less to indicate on the issue of the lack of maintenance and proper infrastructure, again, it goes back to the issue that our fund allocation is not really, I won't say that it is not good. We have been making attempts as a department to engage National Treasury for quite a number of years to highlight the issues that the committee has raised, the issue of lack of maintenance, the issue of our court infrastructure not being in the best condition, that actually results in them being a threat to the lives of the people, including our own employees. We are very much aware of it. Unfortunately, at times we feel that our hands are tied, because if we do not have the funds to do that, we are unable to do that. And unfortunately, with regard to maintenance, the longer you do not implement planned maintenance, and I have to be very honest to say that I don't believe that we are alone in this boat. I think government in general, the concept of planned maintenance, we are rather rehabilitated when something, the idea is that we will not maintain until it is falling down or somebody complains about it. Which obviously, as we know, that means that the price of actually addressing those issues become even much more higher. Until such time that we're able to also, not just the department, but also the other... not just the Department of Justice, but the other agencies that are involved, that is the Department of Public Works, National Treasury, until they understand the concept of maintenance and why it is important to maintain without necessarily having to rehabilitate, when we find ourselves in such. We have been building infrastructure. We have built almost 16 courts since 1994. But at the expense of maintaining what we already have, what we're doing is we're increasing our portfolio while we are not able to maintain. Now, it's a catch-22 situation. Do we focus the funds, the limited funds that we have, towards maintaining what we already own, while we're now on the same breath that we still have?
Chair, can we ask the person whose phone is on to switch off, please?
Oh, sorry. Apologies for that. As I was saying, I think we find ourselves in a catch-22 situation as to where do we focus our very limited funds. Do we go and build where we know that there is a need for us to provide new infrastructure, where we know that there's a need for us to put to effect major additions in our existing courts and or where we need totally new courts altogether, or do we take those funds and maintain the portfolio that we already have? Now that's the juggle that we have to make. Unfortunately, in that process, it means that maintenance might not take priority, but it also means that certain courts might not be built that we need to build. What we have presented to you in terms of the exact number. And this is purely based on the resource availability, because we would rather tell you what we're able to do with what we have. when we look at the resources that we have, the COO has already indicated that we can only realistically build 2 courts per annum. If you take into account that a proper court with proper facility requires close to 250 million to build, and if you look at the budget that we have, obviously we're not assuming that we will start the project on the 1st of April and complete it on the 31st, but we have to look at the cash flow for that particular year. And it's on that basis that we can decide whether we're able to carry or even add any more projects, taking into account that we already have ongoing projects. The situation as it stands is that we have not taken a decision as a department that we will only continue with the projects that are already ongoing, and simply because we cannot afford to carry the cash flow that is related to adding any new projects. What will happen, as Mr. Johnson has already indicated, is that fortunately we have a bit of an increase from 2012-13. We are hoping that that will give us an opportunity to then build more of those projects that we have put on hold, including the Mara Lodis and a whole lot of other and the list of others that we have. We're hoping that we'll be able to finalize the planning and also that the projects that are ongoing, we have about 4 major projects that are ongoing, that have been ongoing since 2009-2010. Like I said, they're multi-year projects. The increase will mean that we can be able to add, but also that these major projects, we're hoping that by then they will be complete, meaning that the cash flow that is currently tied will be released for us to implement additional projects. I hope that answers your concern on the projects. The 7 projects we do have, I don't know if you want me to mention them, but we have Katlehong, the Bulukwane High Court, Sakana Magistrate Office in Tizuma, Henking, Enkangala, and Kagiso. Those are the projects that are ongoing. Most of them are due for completion in either this current financial year or next financial year. That helps by saying that we're hoping that the cash flow that is currently tied into these projects will then be released for us to be able to start other projects. With regard to the issue of accessibility for people with disability in our courts, again, we also have to admit, and we are very much aware of the court order that is in place. We did try as a department to address that with limited funds that we have. In 2009-2010, the department put aside 120 million to address that specific problem. Through those funds, we had a total of 279 calls where we attempted to address the issue of disability accessibility for people with disability. I use the term attempted because obviously that we were focusing on what we refer to as phase one. Now, phase one only deals with accessibility of calls to people with physical disability. That means your simple rent, where possible, horse and lifts. But even that is not sufficient, taking into account that we have a total of about more than 750 courts throughout the country. We could only attend to so much. And as I've said, it only deals with the physical, not accessibility for people with physical disability. There are other forms of disabilities that we are unable to attend to right now. But as a department, we are trying to funding within the very limited resources that we have. And it is our feeling that until such time that organizations like National Treasury acknowledge that this needs to be a special focus funding, probably referred with a specific mandate, we are not able to address it because, like I said, we have to know our very limited budget has to compete for what we also believe are priorities within the department, and that is maintaining the existing infrastructure as well as providing infrastructure that is required. Just to give you an idea of the shortfall that we're talking about, in this current financial year alone, our allocation is about 682 million. But in terms of the cash flow, and that is or based on the projects that are ongoing, major projects, additional projects, and otherwise smaller or more project. We need at least 1.7 billion. So obviously, some projects will have to be put aside until such time. We will probably always have a backlog, but the question is at what pace, given the limited resources that we have, can we eat into that backlog? And unfortunately, with regard to maintenance, while we are attending to others to carry the backlog of the infrastructure, we will also be increasing the backlog of the maintenance requirements. So we have to juggle that ball. I would want to give you specific in terms of the time, the backlog, the exact backlog, and the time frame that it will take us to deal with it, assuming that we will receive the resources that require to deal with it.
Chairperson, I perhaps would want to raise two issues. One issue is the issue of underspending. It's a fact that this department in 2003 or 2004 underspend the budget worth nearly 400 million rand. But I really think that in the past number of years we've improved substantially. In the last financial year, last reported one, we've underspent with 13 million rand. Our expenditure was 99.7%. In general, we believe that the issue of underspending is under control. Through early detection, we've got structures in place. Budget review teams that may assess budgets and make recommendations to EXCO. A lot of funding, if there's savings.
Sir, can I just repeat, in the last financial year, what was your underspending?
13 million.
1.3. Our research gives us something different.
Perhaps can reflect, the department and there's the National Prosecuting Authority. In total, the underspending was 26 million. Out of the 13 million was the Department of Justice, the rest was the National Prosecuting Authority. Okay.
We just check what is the difference between National Prosecuting Authority, who do they report to? Where does the budget come from?
They report to the Director General of Department of Justice, but in terms of the Treasury approved process, they report separately. They table their own financial statements, and we report on the area that we are managing. And furthermore, for us, if we look at the optimal utilization of the budget, Treasury makes recommendations to Cabinet. It's a Cabinet committee. At the end of the day, Cabinet approved the allocation for justice. We can confirm to you, in line with the presidential initiative, we've looked at our budget, and with our treasury allocations, we've sourced funding for capacitation for job creation. Some of the money came from National Treasury. I think the essence is I've reflected the schedule of possible positions that we want to fill, in addition to our vacancies. I think some of those posts has already been advertised. What we possibly can do to you is provide you with a schedule of planned date of appointments, and also possibly, and the HR community can assist, and also, what is our strategy to fill our vacancies, but surely, from our side, there was an effort to reprioritize within our baseline, and see how we can release funding for job creation. Thank you.
I agree, the point he has raised, when we received the AG's report, are we going to get two different reports, or are we going to get a single report from the accounting officer? Because you see, we must clarify these things, you know. Because in terms of reporting, if the AG's report says 26 million, and you are telling us 13 million, you are telling us a different story. Because if the AG says, in terms of the accounting officer, underspending is 26 million, and you want to come and tell us 13 million, because that's the point we're not going to take. You see? Because the fact that if the AG says this department has underspent by 26 million, and these are the units that underspend. Now, if you tell us the different units, but the department has underspent by 26, it's a different story. You see?
But if you're telling us that the department is underspent by 13 million and the AG gives us a different story, then there's something wrong with yourselves.
Chairperson, I mean the National Prosecuting Authority tables, that's mean a different or I mean a set of financial statements apart, apart from justice. Yes, I agree with you. The AG presents a consolidated report of the total the total vote. I mean we are appearing now before you as justice and justice alone. I can only report to the underspending in relation to justice. So I don't dispute the numbers, it's consistent with our numbers, but the accountability arrangements is is that the NPA reports separately and we report to the person that we present.
You see the approach now is confuses, because you report that the 13 million comes from this combined is 26 million. Immediately you mention that, you are accounting. I think that must be noted. So that those that are up for justice must be separated totally from this other aspect, like the director of our archivate. You serve as a conduit of chapter 9. How do we then account for that? There is a man. These are the dynamics that we need to take out so that we understand that this responsibility is for department, chapter 9 account like this, LPA account like that, so that we don't keep on questioning what do I say. It's very, very important. I don't know how to deal with that. Maybe if it needs policy changes or legislative changes, we need to make that recommendation, because it confuses. Because it comes from you, then we question it, and at the same time, it's not your responsibility. It's something that we need to do.
If I may share with your permission, we are currently working on legislative change with regard to the NPA, primarily because of the issues that we are raising, accountability issues. We are trying to have a situation where the NPA accounts on its own separate from the Department of Justice. And there is a legislative amendment that is being worked on. I think it will go through the Senate at some point. Chair,
thank you. Yeah, that is correct. We are working on a bill to make either the national director or the CEO of the National Prosecuting Authority the accounting officer. We have a draft bill. We're working closely officials from the MPA as well as National Treasury. And as I say, we have a draft bill which we need to finalise, and we will bring that bill to Parliament fairly soon. Chair, just on the Chapter 9s, Dr. De Beer did respond, but if I may just add one or two issues to what he has said. Honourable members are aware of Section 181(3) of the Constitution that provides that organs of state, through legislative and other measures, must assist and protect Chapter 9 institutions to ensure the independence, impartiality, dignity and effectiveness of these institutions. Now, I can assure this committee chair that in all our dealings with the Chapter 9 institutions, we have done so with this section in mind. And I'm sure that once we've fully established our constitutional development component that Dr. De Beer has referred to, that we will then also look at this section in relation to other organs of state and not only the Department of Justice. The reference to the police public protector issue, Chair, I cannot respond to that question. That is probably something that one should ask the police. I know that the Portfolio Committee did have a meeting on this matter, and perhaps this committee can do the same. Chair, with reference to
you see, my question was just a principle matter, to say how is justice protected. That's a matter of principle. Not on the matter of what occurred sometimes back, because that one might be sub judice or whatever. But I was just saying, because here, so sorry, justice is assisting Chapter 9. And I'm sure it includes Chapter 10. they are all more or less the same. I suspect. That's why I was saying, how are they protected? Because when there was an outcry, there was no an expression, in principle, whether they are independent or they are the first gen position somewhere or whatever, something like that. That was a principle question, not necessarily a matter of detail, because we know where it belongs. The other issue that, as we read the critique of Chapter 9 in relation to the department, it's like maybe we need them to call, it's not that we don't have referring to call Chapter 9, but they are belonging to NA. If we had that in terms of the constitutional power, we would call them. Because it's like there's a complaint of say the very same assistance that they get from the department to them amount to the erosion of their independence. You know? But these are politics. Maybe not, it's not for that.
I think the honourable members referring to your silence over the issue of the public protector. She was all by herself.
Yes, Chair, I think that is one point that you made that we note, and we will certainly convey that to our DG as well. That possibly we should have also been involved in that process. Chair, but as I have indicated in all our dealings with the Chapter 9s, we've always respected the provisions of the Constitution, and not only the Constitution, but their own legislation as well. As you will recall, Parliament approved the South African Human Rights Commission Act when we still had the interim constitution. We are at this very moment looking at that act, and you will recall when I briefed you on our legislative program, I did make reference to the fact that we have on our program the South African Human Rights Commission Amendment Bill. We've been working very closely with the previous Human Rights Commission as well as with the new Human Rights Commission on the amendments to their act. The idea with the amendments is firstly to bring it in line with the new constitution, because as I have indicated, it's still based on the interim constitution, and then also to deal with a number of practical issues relating to their work, which we are confident once those amendments have been approved that it will assist them in their performance as well. As far as the budget is concerned, Chair, I think Dr. De Beer responded to that. You will recall that the Carter Asmal report did make recommendations as far as the administration of the budgets and where it should lie is concerned, but that report has not yet been accepted by Parliament. It has not been debated and it has not yet been accepted. We did from our side look at that report to see whether there are a number of amendments contained in that report that we can include in our bill, and we also we are doing so at this very moment. I think, Chair, this bill will be introduced during the third quarter, depending on our engagement with the South African Human Rights Commission.
Yes, okay.
Chair, I've got a note to answer on the issue of our objectives being vague and also on the progress on our annual performance plan. We did indicate in the presentation that some of our objectives are not yet finalized. Because for the first time we have been asked that our objectives need to be SMART. In the past it was only our indicators, our annual indicators that needed to be, but the new framework asks us that our objectives, our 5-year objectives need to be SMART. So some of them, yes, are vague and we are working on them. But on the issue of our annual performance plan, our annual performance plan, as indicated, we need to complete it by the end of this month. Consultations are going ahead as planned, and we intend to finish all the consultations with different branches and units by the end of this week. The intention is that in the next executive committee meeting in about 2 weeks' time, we will get approval for the annual performance plan. And in that annual performance plan, we stipulate exactly what performance is expected from different units. And on top of that, we clarify the definition of the indicator exactly how are we going to calculate it, and exactly what sort of documentation are we going to put forward as evidence of performance. So we are working hard on it, and we're going to make sure that for the new year, that all our indicators for the upcoming year are clear, and we will make those available to this committee if asked. Thanks.
No, Chair, it is clear that this is work in progress. We will await the finalization of these particular plans before we deal with this program. Because I don't think it will be correct for us to move if we don't have the department having finalized their program, so that we can then deal with something that is before us, not something that we don't know or neither understand. Thank you, Chair.
Let me take the opportunity to thank the DDV and your team. But I think you are aware that there are a number of issues that are outstanding that we have to deal with. And we think, time allowing, we will maybe call department to come and brief us again and clear those issues that we say they are outstanding, and we have to get to the bottom of them and know what is really happening. But let me also indicate that we'll be going to Northwest and Mpumalanga next month and interact with the course there, and we will come back to you and raise those issues that maybe will necessitate your intervention. And as you said, that the program has not been yet finalized, we'll also await the final program, and maybe when we have perused it, we will once again arrange for a meeting with you. But in any case,
I thought you must not forget the issues we have raised, that we request from the department.
Yes.
So that we receive all those things. But I want to also, because we have raised the Pretoria issue, you know, that we zoom into Pretoria and deal with it specifically, that ourselves, the Ministers Commission, the department, and we move into Pretoria and deal with some of those issues that were raised there. Thank you, Chair.
I think we will arrange, Honorable Matilda, during recess and campaigning period, to go to Pretoria and obviously arrange a meeting with them to deal with the issues that we will confront when we are there. And those other issues that we are expecting in writing from the department, we will expect them and the DDG to have them immediately we are able to submit them to the committee. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. The DDG, 2 minutes.